The question was asked, how does one bring up one's children with an appreciation for the broader world, for the secular world, and yet not an enticement where they're constantly thinking, oh, it must be so much fun to go live in the United States or go party. There's this balance which we want to attain. On the one hand, we don't want to overexpose them. On the other hand, we want them to be exposed enough that they'll understand what it is and not be excessively drawn to it. Right? That's the question in a nutshell. So I think in different areas the answers are different, and we'll begin maybe with the simplest, most balanced formula, and then explore other angles, and we're going to see that in different areas of chinuch the answer is different. It's not a one size fits all. It depends what we're discussing. So one of the points that's very important in chinuch is to find a good environment for your children. A good environment means one that's supportive of what you're teaching. You don't want to raise your children where the norms of the society or the school or the neighborhood contradict your norms. My wife and I were once contemplating moving to a neighborhood. And we went there, and when we visited there, so one of the things I did was walk around the streets at night. And I came back to the house where we were being hosted, and I see kids sitting on the front lawn doing drugs. So you ask yourself, do you want to bring up your kids where you're going to have kids on the front lawn doing drugs? You don't want to expose them to that. At some point, they're going to have to understand there are drugs in the world, but there's a difference between understanding it and having it on your front lawn, right? In the religious world, there's also certain things which you don't want happening on your front lawn. We lived once in an apartment where at night the kids would hear spouses yelling at the top of their lungs, and that's not exactly the environment you want your kid to live in. I remember when we moved in here into the apartment we're in now, I remember the first morning I woke up to the sounds of the neighbor saying Modeh Ani with his son. And I was thinking, I said to my wife, look at what a different world. That's the sounds I want to wake up to. I don't want to go to sleep and wake up to the neighbor yelling at his wife and she's calling him names and he's calling her names. So we do try to choose an environment that's going to be supportive of the direction we want our children to grow up in. And yet, there are areas where you have to realize the child is going to be exposed and you have to find a balanced way to approach it. So let's take a small example. Our children aren't heavily exposed to television or video or iPhones or iPads. I don't own an iPhone or an iPad. I have a web page, which they're aware of. I mean, they know I have a website with Shiurim. But that's about the extent of it. They're still little, and they're not yet playing on the web. And it came as a big shocker to us when 2 or 3 weeks ago we were discussing with them about who's happy and who's wealthy, and the idea that the Mishnah teaches us that a wealthy person is he who's happy with his lot. And one of the children turned to us and said, yeah, but we're not wealthy. So I asked him, what are we missing? And he said, well, you don't have an iPhone. And I didn't even know he knew the word. So I looked at him and I said, what's an iPhone? So he said to me, I don't know. So I said, then why are you telling me we're not wealthy because we don't have an iPhone? So he said, well, an iPhone is some kind of instrument that has a lot of games on it and a lot of interesting things that you don't have. So I said to him, you know, when I opened the bank account a few months ago, the bank offered me a free iPhone, and I said, I don't want it. So he looked at me and his jaw dropped, and he was like, it's true. I didn't make up the story. It happens to be they offered me an iPad, not an iPhone, but I figured to him the difference is negligible. So he said to me, why didn't you take it? So I said, because I have no use for it. I didn't want it. So he said, that's what he said to me. You should have taken it and given it to me, and I would have sold it. So I said, okay, when you'll grow older, we'll discuss why it wasn't worth it. So the real shocker for me was that here this boy is growing up in a cheder where they're not allowed to bring cell phones to school, let alone iPhones. He's growing up in, theoretically, a relatively closed environment where we keep asking ourselves, how can we expose him to the broader world? And he's telling me about an iPhone. So the kids are growing up in a world, and they're getting educated not only by us, they know what's out there. So 2 weeks ago, a relative of ours came to visit here in Israel, and we took the kids to say hello and to spend some time with the relative. And as usually happens, after the kids were with the relative for a half hour, they went off to do their thing, and I'm still talking to the relative. And I noticed that they're walking 10 feet away in the lobby there. There's a television playing. So ordinarily, I'd consider, should they, shouldn't they? I saw that the thing that was playing there was about a person contemplating suicide during the time of war. So it's a soldier who's contemplating suicide. And I said to myself, that's not what I want them to see. A man standing there with a knife trying to force himself to slit his own throat. That's the scene I saw when they walked towards the TV. So I pulled them away from the TV and they asked me, why can't we watch? Now they know we don't watch movies and they know we don't have a TV at home. But they're old enough that I realized now is the time where I'm going to have to balance this idea that we don't have a TV and videos at home. What do I mean by balancing it? So about 13 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, no, it's more, about 15, 16 years ago, I went to a big Hasidish Rebbe. I'm not sure if he wants me to say his name. And I discussed with him, being that I want to take the course of building a home which is going to stress Torah and Torah values, what do I do about television with my kids? And what do I do about videos? I grew up with a TV, more than one. I grew up with videos and movies, and I know what's out there. I'm going to bring up my kids without it, so they're going to have an even greater desire because they've never seen it. So he said, you're right. What you have to do is find the right opportunities to sit them down by a relative who has a TV or a video and decide with your wife which video you're going to expose them to, and then show them so that, first of all, it shouldn't be this forbidden fruit that they never come into contact with. It should be something which every so often they do get, and that will already cause the desires to subside a little bit because they get a taste of it every so often. So that's number one. This happens to be a person who is a huge Talmud Chacham from the Haredi world. I'm not sure he wants me to quote online his name. And secondly, he said, make sure you and your wife are present as they're watching. It's not that you're just putting it behind the rug and you're saying, okay, go do that. You've approved. You've given them permission. They're going to sit down and enjoy it. And you and your wife have to also point out to them what was wrong with what they saw. Meaning, you gave them permission to see it, but at the same time, there are going to be messages that you see in the video they're going to see. As good a video as it's going to be, there are going to be messages there which you'll tell them, did you notice A or B or C that are really not Torah values that you saw when you watched that? Just you should be aware of it. Meaning, yes, we let you see it. And at the same time, you should also see that it is putting you into contact with things that are less than positive. But you're still going to see it. You want to see it, and it's normal that a person wants to see it. And there will be other opportunities when we let you see it, because we want you to have from both worlds. And you basically, you have to play that line where the child, on the one hand, is exposed, and on the other hand, has an appreciation for where it stands. I was talking, I don't remember who I was talking to. I was talking to a person who works in the television here. He's one of the producers. And I asked him, where do you work? So he said to me, in the Tembelavizia. So I quoted that to my kids, and they were shocked. I said to them, look, he's working there. And he told us. So Part of what happens is you have a conversation, you have conversations where the kids are going to ask you, why don't we watch TV and why don't we go to the movies and why don't we do A, B, C, and D? And then you tell them on their level, look, there are a lot of things there that we feel are not in line with the way the Torah wants us to lead our lives, and so we choose not to have that. We respect the people who have it. That's an important point. We're not coming to knock everyone who doesn't. But we choose this route because this is what we think is right. And we'll also give you opportunities to see for yourself. It shouldn't be this forbidden fruit. So there is that realm of things which you can do that with. Meaning there are certain things like television, video, computer. You could even show them the positive things. Much to my charging, some of the schools that make you sign that you don't have a DVD and you'll never show your kids even a DVD of a wedding video, go ahead and show the kids DVDs and videos. So you say, wait a second, if you admit it's kosher and you're doing it with the kids, what are you doing with me? We had a school that made us sign that, and then every Rosh Chodesh, their treat to the children was, they'd play a video for them. And my wife and I wouldn't send the child on Rosh Chodesh, because we said, it's one thing if you want to show them a video. Yeah, I agree. There are educational videos. I use the tool all the time. Look at this. I'm being taped right now. I have no issue with your if you're going to take a balanced approach to the child and you tell them this is a tool. This is something that can be used positively. But if you're going to take an extreme stance on the one hand and say you have to sign, you don't even have a DVD at home, which I don't. And on the other hand, you're going to make it the treat of Rosh Chodesh. Don't you think you're contradicting yourself? I have no issue if you use it as an educational tool. I have no issue if you make it into a fun tool, but don't contradict yourself. Be consistent. So we would take out the child every Rosh Chodesh and give him a different treat because we felt that the institution was contradicting themselves. You can't do that with the kids. Speak one way and then act the other way. At the same time, I have no issue with taking my child and showing them a DVD on how tzitzis are made, and showing them a DVD on how matzah is made, and showing them a million things. We took our kids, we showed them. We couldn't take them to a matzah factory. One year my wife was due, Mamash Erev Pesach. It wasn't Shaykh that year. So we showed them a video of how the matzahs are made and everything, and they were thrilled. What's wrong with that? Nothing wrong with that. It's a tool. It's an excellent tool. And I have no issue. But then you shouldn't take a far-out stance either. Take a normal stance. It's a tool which is often used improperly and can be used properly, and we can use it too. Yeah. You want something?
On that same kind of note, more has to do with, like, I guess when they're more teenagers or something, and then they start questioning, they start saying, like, you know, I'm saying this, like, I remember this as me, like, they start asking, like, how come, first of all, should you tell them, like, when I was a kid, I had a TV, when I was a kid, like, should you let them know? Because, well, eventually, like, definitely find out, like, from their uncles, from their cousins.
So we'll get there. It's another thing we'll deal with, the broader parenting circle. And that's why I said, let's begin with the most balanced thing. And then we're going to deal with situations where we can't take such an approach. Part of the balanced approach, to my mind, is to know what's important and what's not. So some people go all out and say, you can't have a toy of Winnie the Pooh, and you can't have a Cinderella. And I think they're going too far. Meaning, I understand you don't want to idolize Disney. Fine. I understand you want your children growing up on pure stories and not Cinderella and Snow White. Fine. I don't think it's the end of the world that they hear Cinderella and Snow White, but I don't see it as necessary. It's not something which they have to know, and whatever, fine. I can respect either way a person wants to go. But I think it's wrong if a person goes so far as to tell his parents, if you're going to bring blankets to the kids and toys to the kids, make sure it doesn't have any Disney figures on it. Or, I want to go with what I heard, the name of the Rebbe of Chabad, that you shouldn't have any impure animals for the children to play with. Let your children play with an elephant. There's nothing wrong with it. That's fine. Non-kosher animals. It's fine. It doesn't say it anywhere in Shulchan Aruch, so, you know, there's enough to deal with in Shulchan Aruch. We don't have to go looking for new concepts. And people sometimes make that into their religion. Let's focus on what's important. You tell me I don't want my child playing with a doll of a girl that wears a mini skirt or pants. I could hear that. I'm not sure I would go that far, but I could hear that. You tell me I don't want it because it's Snow White? Who cares? Your child either knows or doesn't know what Snow White is. Big deal. So they'll see a little yellow bear, and they won't know it's Winnie the Pooh. So you'll call it Winnie the Pooh, you'll make the problem, if you think it's a problem. And what's so terrible if they know the story of Winnie the Pooh? The Gemara tells us that they had folklore in the days of the Gemara, which everyone knew, and the Gemara even refers to. So it's not the end of the world. I understand that you say there's a whole movement, and there's a whole society has gone in this way that Disney is like the focus of the child, and I don't want that. Fine. But you could also be balanced on that. There's nothing too terrible about that. I think there are plenty of good Torah stories. I don't think it's necessary to bring in Snow White. And psychologists claim that these stories of they lived happily ever after are not educational. So there's room to explore that. But I think here again, let's remain balanced. It's not the end of the world if he knows about it. It's not the end of the world if he doesn't. And it's not the end of the world if he has a doll of Snow White or she has a doll of Snow White. Meaning we can... We can keep things balanced. In my day, Snow White had a very long skirt. I mean, I don't see why anyone... She still does. I don't see what the big deal is. And that brings us to a whole other parsha of parents. And where parents contradict our chinuch or other relatives contradict our chinuch. And here again, we have to pick our battles. So let's see. My children have to eat kosher. Some people have parents who will feed their children food that does not have a hechsher. The parents have to understand that that's not acceptable and that there will be serious consequences if that happens. What do I mean? A parent has to understand that if they can respect our way of life, then we will be able to let them be with the children more and more independently. If we feel that they don't respect it, then we won't be... We and they will lose that privilege. Meaning... All we're asking is that they respect it. So part of my end of that deal is that before parents come, I think children are responsible to buy bags full of nash, all kinds of sweets, and all kinds of toys that the parents should give the children. I do that for all my relatives. I tell them, don't bother bringing stuff from the States. Today they limit you to one bag. You can barely fit your stuff into it. You'll bring another bag. You're going to pay so much, you didn't save anything. I'll buy the toys here. The kids won't know it. You'll give it. We buy the sweets here. You'll give it. We achieve two things that way. We achieve that it's the stuff that we approve of educationally and the stuff that we approve of conscience-wise. I don't have to break my head over what they bring me here. What kind of hechsher is that? And they're happy. They don't have to schlep and they have it ready and the kids don't know it. And I show up to the hotel and I hide. I show up sometimes with the kids to the airport. So I hide a special bag or whatever with the sweets, you know, for the first meeting when they see their grandparents or their uncles and aunts or whatever. And they have stuff to give them right away and then they're happy and then we have a whole other bag that comes in later and the kids don't know. So it involves a certain amount of effort, but that's to be expected. So what? So I think people have to be intelligent and fair to the parents. I had one guy who asked me, my parents don't know anything about kosher. So what can I do in the house? So I asked him, are they going to eat meat or dairy? They're going to be by you for 2 weeks. They came, his wife was giving birth. He said to me, I don't remember if it was meat or dairy, whichever one they were going to be big fans of. So I said, fine, let's say it was meat. You buy all the meat and stock the fridge with and freezer with meat and everything that in the house and take all the milk products and get rid of them and take all your milk dishes and hide them, milk and par. So you know that for these 2 weeks, everything's fleshets. Don't leave them with the challenge of having butter and their meat and they don't remember and they're not used to it. Don't make them do the work. You do the work. Meaning it's not fair just because they don't know and you have demands, so you're going to have expectations of them. You have to be forthcoming. So at the same time that I say they have to be respectful of us, we have to be respectful and we have to go the extra mile towards them. So that's another point. But then run into points, like you said, that the uncles are going to start telling them, and you know what your dad did, it's unavoidable. And here I think it's important to be truthful with the kids to a point. Meaning, they don't have to know everything you did in your past, but there's nothing wrong with their knowing that, yeah, I grew up with TV, so I've often told my kids, I wasn't as fortunate as you. When I grew up, I was wasting my time. I wasn't learning at your age. And yeah, I grew up with a TV, and that's why I know it's not a good idea for you. And they'll say, well, let me try. And I'll say, fine, there will be opportunities, and you will try. But I can tell you from my experience, I don't recommend it. But fine, you want to try, you will try. So I think you shouldn't try to hide everything about your past. There are certain things about your past that are none of their business. They don't need to know if a person was promiscuous during certain parts of his life. That's none of their business. They don't need to know if a person was not Shomer Nagia. They don't need to know about many things about a person's past. Certain things, yes, and certain things are not relevant. And I think if it's not self-understood, then one could spell that out to the uncles and parents.
What about like when they're whatever, 18, 16, 17, and they start saying, like, well, I want to hang out with the girls, whatever, I want to, and can you say, like, listen, I did when I was your age, and this happened, and I had really given it before, was it a bad idea to even share that, those kinds of experiences?
So you have to understand the challenge that a Chozer B'Tshuva's child contends with. And in order to explain this, I want to first go to a Medrash. The Medrash says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came to Midian and he wanted to marry Yisro's daughter, so Yisro said to Moshe, one condition, you have to give me one child for idol worship. And the Medrash says Moshe agreed. So you read that Medrash and you say, what? What's going on here? That doesn't sound right. Right? Our sages say that the Medrash can't be understood literally. The conversation between Yisro and Moshe went as follows. We know Yisro was a monotheist too. So what was he asking for a child for idol worship? So our sages say it means as follows. Yisro said to Moshe, you Jews, you grow up with this tradition. They teach you what's right. And from day one, you know that there's one God who created the world, and you're monotheist from day one. That's very nice. I got to the same conclusion. But I explored the whole world before I got to that conclusion. And I don't think the approach to educating children should be so one-dimensional. Let them explore the world and come back to what's right, the way I did. And Moshe said no, and Yisro said yes, and Yisro said, fine, I'll let you marry my daughter. But one kid has to have a decent education. One kid you have to educate my way. Show him everything that's wrong around the world and come back to what's right. And Chazal say Moshe erred and Moshe agreed. And that's why Chazal said the next generation, Moshe's own grandson, ultimately was a priest for pagans. And Chazal say it goes back to that mistake in Moshe's chinuch. The first generation, you couldn't see it. The next generation already, it came out wrong. So this brings us back to that question. How much do I expose children to? I had a friend who told me, if you don't expose them to the internet, you're crippling them for life. And I said, nonsense. You first bring them up pure. And when they'll hit the age of 15, 16, 17, you'll slowly expose them and let them use the tool and show them how to use it well. You don't take a child and tell them, here's some venom, experiment with it. You don't take a child and tell them, here are the pubs, experiment with it. You don't tell a child, well, some people have AIDS and some people don't have AIDS, experiment with it. You don't take a child and put them in front of the internet and say, experiment with it. That's not a smart thing to do. The internet is a tool that destroys people's lives. If a person, how many people today are hooked on to the pornography of the internet, the chat rooms of the internet? How many people you have out there that can't go 5 minutes without looking at their iPhone? So I don't think that we have to expose our children to everything. On the contrary, part of our job in educating our children is to maintain them focused in a pure and correct world. And the fact that the child will grow up and start questioning, that's healthy too. Not only is it something to contend with, it's something that should happen. I do that with my children all the time. When I learn with them, I ask them questions. I was learning with my son the other day, the pasuk that says, Hashem says, if not for what Am Yisrael's enemies would say, I would wipe them out. So I said to my son, really, the only reason we're around is because if not for what the enemies would say, really, that God doesn't love us. That doesn't exist. It's just a question of what are they going to say. So he looked and he said, that's a good question. I said, right, you just read the pasuk. What's pshat in the pasuk? He said, I don't know. Abba, what's pshat in the pasuk? I said, you think about it. Go back to your Rebbe and ask him if that's the pshat you learned in the pasuk. So go ask the question. I didn't give him an answer. Well, 5 minutes later, he was still asking. I gave him an answer. But first, I want him to ask. Use your head. I want you to have questions. I want you to explore. I want you to be a thinking human being, not just to rattle off what's happening. This is what you learned. So this is what it says. So this is what it means. No, wait a second. Does that make any sense? I keep asking my son. Almost every week we learn. Almost every week I ask him, wait a second, did that make sense to you? Do you really believe that? I want him to think. I want him to question. So I'm giving him what I think is the correct approach. And with that, I'm trying to develop within him the thought processes to question, to ask, to explore, and to have an open mind. Not just to accept and regurgitate. That takes a certain balanced approach. On the one hand, you give him a path to go on. On the other hand, you give him the tools to question. So, if a child comes and says, I want to hang out with girls, so my answer would be, so do I. It's a normal desire that human beings have. I'm very happy that you're normal. Now, before we go on here, we have to go back to the point at hand, which is one of the greatest challenges of the children of Chozrim B'Tshuva, is that they're growing up like Moshe's Rabbeinu's son grew up. Whether you like it or not, your child is going to be exposed to your siblings, your parents, the society you came from. The idea in his mind is there are two options. I can be orthodox like my father, or I could be unorthodox like my grandfather. And as much as you're going to try to bring him up with what's right, you cannot, as much as you'll try, you will not be able to take that from him. We had a student here who had a great grandfather who was not Jewish. His grandfather was a ger. But he knew he had a great grandfather and third cousins out in Europe who were not Jewish. And he told me, this goes back about 4 years ago. We had a special class about Geirim in memory of Reuven Dov Ber HaEzrachi, Zichrono Livracha. And in that class, we discussed the Midrashim that say how difficult it is for Geirim's children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren for 8, 10, 20 generations, they still feel a connection to another option. So I brought all kinds of Midrashim to placate the Geirim. To make it, to soften the words of the Medrash. And they came to me, including this young man, and they said, it's no softer, it's not true. The truth is the simple reading of the Medrash. If I have a father or a grandfather or a great-grandfather who is not Jewish, I still feel like I have another option. Then there are two norms in my life. I can lead the life you've led, or I could lead the life they've led, and I have a constant struggle within myself. Which way am I going to go? So you're asking, do I tell the kid, hey, I did that when I was a kid? I don't think you should say that if you're going to talk about promiscuity. No, it's very normal that he has a desire for it. I don't think that's something which has to be shared with him if you can avoid it. I think it's fair to tell a child, yeah, it's attractive. That's the way Hashem created us. It's definitely what every person wants. That's why people get married. You'll have a beautiful life with your wife. One can discuss with the child, as much fun as it seems like, believe me, it's not. And it has prices and consequences. And you could discuss what life is like without the moral structure of the Torah or with the moral structure of the Torah. You could discuss the background you came from. And what happens when the child says, Dad, but did you ever try it? I think the answer should be, look, I really don't think we should discuss what I did and didn't do. He understands, but he also understands, you say to a kid, look, there are certain things I did that I'm not proud of, there are certain things I did that I'm not happy I did, and I wish I could have changed things. And I this is where I am, you know, I came from a certain background, and we're not going to go there, we're not going to discuss what I did. I think that it's very healthy that you never say I did it, you never say I didn't do it. And he's left with that question mark where, on the one hand, he thinks, yes. On the other hand, you never overtly said yes. And this is important because part of it is also the feeling that you're faithful to his mother. If he has to think, hey, you were with 50 girls, okay, so you're also with my mother, then to his mind, that can really shake his stability. And it also sets a precedent for him, where he's going to think, no, my dad was promiscuous, I can be promiscuous. And even if he's not going to spell it out, it's going to set a precedent. Whereas if you're not going to go into it, and he's going to say, Dad, come on, tell me, how many girls were you with? And you're going to say, hey, Charlie, I said, we're not discussing it. I didn't say I was. I didn't say I wasn't. I said, we're not discussing it. No, but you know you were. Charlie, I said, I'm not discussing it.
Once you're married, we'll talk about it.
No, we're not going to talk about it once he's married. Why should we? We don't go publicizing what we did wrong. And again, you'd be surprised, even post-marriage, how much a child connects and builds his own self-image based on what he sees his parents doing, or he thinks his parents did. And I think it's very important to avoid the question as long as possible. Change the topic, avoid it. What I'm saying is when he's cornered you and he's 16 or 18, but so long as he haven't gotten to that point, I would avoid it. It should not be part of his psyche. It should not be a norm, a given, that, yeah, this is what Dad did. Okay, I'll also go through my phase and then do tshuva. No. I think so. No, I don't think you should lie. I think it's better to leave it undefined. And in the child's mind, he will intellectually think that you probably did, and he will emotionally feel like you didn't, because you have left him that room to live that way. You understand what I'm saying? And he feels much better with that. To him, it's a much greater security that he could, like, say, well, he didn't answer me. So I don't really know. I had a guy come to me once and tell me he found his mother's cell phone and he found that his mother was having an affair with someone. So it was a question of this person seemed to have been taking advantage of a lot of women. His mother was in divorce proceedings with his father, and he found the text messages, and it was pretty clear that there were improper things going on. So I asked him, it was relevant to know how much to pursue this guy, meaning we needed to know how far he went. So I asked him, do you know they had an affair, or you just know that their discourse was immodest, meaning their conversation? So he said to me, look, I saw their discourse that was immodest, and way beyond what you'd expect from two friendly people. If I wanted to, I knew I could read further into their text messages or chats or instant messages, whatever it was, and see what happened. But the second I saw that, I preferred not to know what else happened. I said, I don't know how I'd be able to live with myself. I don't know how I'd be able to live with the idea that my mother was doing this. So right now, I don't know. What does that tell you? That's that balance where a person can intellectually say, it probably happened, but I don't know. And emotionally, I'd rather believe it didn't happen. And I could live with that because I really don't know. And again, what I'm telling you now is in response to your question, at 16 or 18, when he's cornered you and you're not going to be able to get out of the conversation. But I think there are a lot of things that you can postpone. It's very legitimate to tell a child, we're not going to discuss that now, wait till you're older. Or I really don't think that's appropriate for right now. Or change the topic without his noticing. You know, I don't remember what it was that the kids started asking me, and we were sitting together, and they were getting restless, but they started asking me, maybe it was with the story with the TV, and they said, wait, didn't you watch TV, and what did you used to watch? And I felt the conversation was going down a route which I didn't think was healthy, so I said, hey, you know, Uncle, whatever, never saw you, how quickly you guys can run. Who can run quickest to the soda machine and back? I'm counting to three. One, two, and they were off. Come on, the conversation ended. So, okay, when kids are 7, 9, you can still get away with that. At 12 or 14, you'll have to be smarter to switch the topic. But to say there, it's still a tool you could use. You don't have to answer all of their questions. But again, one of the hardships you have to contend with is that your children will know that your parents, their uncles, are non-observant. And then, in their mind, they have to contend with this idea that there are two norms, whether you like it or not. We don't have to augment the situation. You want to leave them with, as much as possible, a balanced, steady path. It's hard enough for them to choose the right path. How much contact should we have with the parents and the uncles and the aunts? So that depends on how respectful they can be. If a person's father shows up every week with another girlfriend on his motorbike, you have a problem. You could like him as much as you want, but if he's going to show up every week with a different Grandma Susie, that's a problem. The kids are being exposed to something that's very unhealthy. Very important to have close family ties when you can do it. When you can do it. When it's not contradicting the basic fabric of what you're trying to build. So long as you can do that. You might be able to find ways around it and say, look, Dad, I understand you have your girlfriends, but we're going to have to set up times when you could spend time with the grandkids without your girlfriends. There can be ways around it. But you have to realize, it's your job to set up the framework where they won't contradict the chinuch you're building. They won't know how, so you have to help them. Just like we said with the story of what sweets they're going to give the children and what toys they're going to give the children. Sometimes the parents are out in the United States, and then the problem is relatively taken care of, because they see one another once a year, twice a year. It's not such a big issue. And you should try to do it on your domain. As much as they'll try to get you to fly out there and have a vacation and expenses paid, usually you're going to have so many hardships, it's just not worth it.
It's not smart to take
them. Usually it's not worth it. Usually not. What I recommend when people insist that they're going to do it is I say, so then make it a prolonged vacation where one stop is going to be by the parents. Meaning, to be their Shabbos, what are you going to do? They're going to turn on the TV. They don't have a Shabbos table. If they're going to be willing to do Shabbos your way, fine. But chances are not. They don't have a kosher kitchen. So how are you going to have food for the kids? So what are you going to do? You're going to constantly have situations that strain the relationship. So instead, let's do something else. If they live in Florida or in California, go to Disneyland. Go with them to Disneyland. Go on a camping trip. Bring them with you to the camping trip. You can arrange to have kosher food there. You can arrange to have disposables. You can buy for nothing, you know, forks and knives and whatever it takes to make a grill and tovel them. I'm saying it's not such a big deal. It's not such a huge expense. So you'll throw them out when you leave, or you'll leave them for your parents. But I'm saying that way you're in a controlled environment. You walk into their house, what are you going to do? They're going to have cabbage there that's not bug-free. They're going to have food there that's not kosher. They're going to have dishes that are not kosher, microwave that's not kosher. They're going to make popcorn, and they're going to say, what's wrong with the popcorn? It has an OU. Go explain to them that their microwave was covered with bacon. Yeah, you know. So what are you looking for? You're putting yourself in a situation that's going to constantly work at your nerves, your wife's nerves, the kids. It's not healthy. You want a positive experience with the kids? Take them out of the house. Go with them on a camping trip. Go with them on a vacation trip. You should have minimal time in their house to avoid the conflict so that the visit will be one that's conducive to the relationship. That's my recommendation. Shabbos, don't be there. Yom Tov, don't be there. Take a trip during the summer. You want to make it a long trip, make it a 10-day trip. Shabbos in the middle, you'll be by a Chabad somewhere. You'll be with them for a few days beforehand. I also think that very often parents are happy if you're together for 2 days. They don't need you to be together for 2 weeks. They have their own lives. Sometimes they're gung-ho, they want to go with you. Fine, you're on a camping trip, you'll rent a car. They'll be happy to take the kids shopping. They'll be happy to go with them to Toys R Us once. Fine. But to be in their house when you don't have kashrus and you don't have Shabbos and you're going to run into all these problems, I don't see how that's going to be conducive to the relationship. You're not going to put Judaism on the back burner for that Shabbos. So it's better to find a scenario which will be good for them. And that's what I would encourage people to do, to to find a way to have a neutral environment where you control what's there. Tell them not to bring their own sweets. Again, tell them, let's go together to the store and buy the marshmallows. Don't bring me those gelatin marshmallows. I know we'll find good kosher marshmallows. And sometimes you have to prepare in advance. If you don't know if you'll find kosher marshmallows where your parents live, so buy kosher marshmallows here. You know it's important to your dad to have marshmallows on the fire. So think in advance. It involves thought. It involves not only demanding from them, but thinking in advance how to make it work with them. What's our role as parents? We have to realize that we have many roles. Okay, so is there anything specific you want us to address? This? Okay. So let's discuss what our roles are, and let's discuss what our roles aren't. A child has one father and one mother, and that's it. And there are certain things that if you won't do, no one else will do. You're the one that has to love him and believe in him when no one else will. You're the one that has to clean up his vomit. You're the one that has to hold his hand as he's vomiting. Yeah, that's your job as a parent. You're supposed to be stable and consistent. Stable and consistent. So a person has to have his own stability and consistent. You're supposed to be right. Not a liar, but right. And part of being right is to sometimes say, I don't know, and sometimes say, I was wrong. But you have to be right, which means if you're uncertain, verify. Educating a child is not trial and error. This didn't work, let's try that. This didn't work, let's try that. In certain senses, you're learning as you go along because a child is a human being too. But in many senses, you have to know what you're talking about. You can't tell the child one day, not to be in the house, it's a terrible thing. I had a friend who grew up this way. One year his father was a serious chozer b'tshuva, no TV, no videos, you guys have to learn all day. The next year the father was drinking beer, watching TV, watching videos, and kicking his feet up on the sofa every day after work. And it kept going back and forth, and the kids ended up messed up, totally messed up. You have to be consistent, you have to be stable. I prefer someone stable watching TV than someone unstable flipping back and forth. You're the one that has to tell him when he's wrong. You're the one that has to teach him what's right and wrong, what's fair and not fair, what's moral and not moral. There's no one else that's going to do it. You want the kid who's selling drugs down the block to teach him? You want the teacher to teach him? No. Your job. We live in a generation that shifts a lot of the responsibilities to the schools. It doesn't work. Teacher's not going to do it. You have to do it. You have to build his confidence. You have to build his morals. You have to tell them what's right and what's wrong. And we often forget that children don't know. What are you not? You are not his friend. Parents are sometimes very focused on this idea, I want to be his friend, I want him to love me. No, that's not your job. Your job is to do what's good for him. Your job is to care for him. Your job is not to think, how does he rate me? If you will honestly, sincerely do your best to do good for him in a true way, not to buy his appreciation, not to buy his love, not out of guilt, then you will help him. Then you will be a good parent. Sometimes you need help, you need guidance. It's worth talking to people. We make our biggest mistakes in chinuch when we don't work out of responsibility and real love. A parent has to work too hard, so they want to pay off the child. I don't have time to spend with you. Say, here's $100, go have a good time. You did wrong. You did doubly wrong. A parent doesn't have patience for a kid, go watch a movie. Is that what he needs or is that what I need? Am I focused on taking care of him or am I focused on taking care of me? I have my rights too, and he has to respect them. I have my needs too, and he has to respect them. I should be considerate of myself too, and he's going to have to live with that. But most of the time I have to focus on his needs. Most of the time I have to deal with me being his parent, my responsibilities to him. If I'm picking up my child from Gan, and I'm texting my friend, and he wants to share with me what happened in Gan, and I lose patience with him because I'm busy texting my friend, I'm wrong. He's right. He's entitled to be a child. Chaim, if you're not going to be quiet, there's going to be no dessert today. What did he do wrong? He's entitled to be a child. But how many times do we let out our balls, our impatience on him? And that's not right. So yes, I have my rights, and he's going to have to respect them. And sometimes I'm busy, and I won't be able to answer him. But sometimes I have to ask myself, am I really busy? Or do I choose to prefer texting, emailing, reading the news, than talking to him? So if I've given him a lot of attention, I'm also entitled to read the news. But if every time he comes to me, I got to do something else, I better check myself. Tov.